West Brazil Albion. Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of this season's Real Football Cast. As always, I'm your host, Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes, we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days, while in addition to that, there are also some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye, and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. It's been another incredible week of football, and this week it's once again a full house. That means leading the line around the captain's armband is Carl. So Carl, how have you been since we last spoke?
Yeah, good thanks, Dan. Plenty of chocolate stocked up, which helps when you're a Spurs fan at the moment. But looking forward to chatting all things Premier League.
Yeah, I think Tottenham have put you in a diabetic coma at the moment, but more on that in a moment. So Matthew, you're joining us as per. Not been a great period for Fulham, but how are you doing?
No, I'm just trying to work out what's the next stage up from diabetic coma if we're talking about chocolate having to cure people from football results, given how fun I've been.
I don't know. Not too good. I don't think it would be one you want to try. But Max, how are you, mate? How have you been keeping? How are all things Palace?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm maybe the only one happy with my side's club form. I've got very high chocolate levels as well. I'm maybe in kind of inoperable chocolate coma, if that's the medical terminology you want to use. I'm really pleased to have got the right day as well, because last Monday I was just sitting in my bedroom until about 2:30, just waiting for it to start. And yeah, finally got it right, I think.
Top man. Right, before we chat all things Premier League, I'll do the social media bits, otherwise we'll be talking to the Abyss once more. So first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at Dan Tracy, 1983. Also, the podcast has its own account, which is at Real Football Pod. If you want to become a shareholder, all you need to do is follow and join our very elite members club. Talking of clubs, I'm delighted to announce that we're now on the UK's first ever sports podcast network. That's the Sports Social. All you need to do is follow our URL and all the episodes will be on that page. You can also find us via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. Use that platform. Don't forget to subscribe and you won't miss a single episode. If you like us, leave a review so we move up the league table. And I need to mention my two content partners. If you like betting and all things money, go to betting.com for my pre-match previews. If you like opinion and thought pieces, go to nowsport.com. And the easiest way to find all the links is by going to linktree.com/realfootballcast, put a dot in the R and the E, and you get 10, yes, 10 podcast platforms. It's never been easier to listen to the show. Right, it's time to go live. Where should we go first? Well, I think the only place we can go is Stamford Bridge. And Cole, after Thomas Tuchel saw his unbeaten streak come to an end, the German now knows what it's like to be Allardyced.
Yes, right. You know, you can't say you've fulfilled your career if you haven't had that honour, can you? You know, to have been Allardyced by the Walrus, you know, a Walrus flap. But yeah, real freak result, wasn't it? You know, one of them sort of games that when you're watching it, you just kind of can't believe what's unfolding in front of you. And I guess if you're Chelsea, you'd have to look at it as it's, you know, one of those freak results that sometimes happen during a season, but they'll need to take that as a massive wake-up call because they really weren't on it. And yeah, as we've said, you know, before, in this league, if you're not on it 100% and paying the opposition the sort of respect that they deserve, then all the teams in the league have got the capability of kind of causing you problems and giving you a bit of a bloody nose. And that's what happened, you know, weren't helped with a sending off, obviously, but Chelsea just didn't really look at it at all. But fair play to West Brom because they took full advantage. And that is a win that they certainly wouldn't have seen coming and no one else did.
Well, I think that's the coupon buster of the weekend. But Matthew, in terms of the game, the Blues go 1-0 up. And I think everyone was guilty of falling into the trap of, well, do you know what, it's pretty much done. Then, minutes later, Thiago Silva gets himself sent off. Now, the first yellow card, I don't think there was much contention at all. The second one, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I'd say it was a second yellow as well. You know, if he'd have been sent off for either of the two offences, you might want to take a look and say, oh no, something's clearly gone wrong there. Because, you know, even the first one, you can make an argument with, you know, who trying to go through on goal. You can make the argument for that, but it would have been a very harsh one. But at the same time, two yellow cards culminating. Yeah, I think that makes some level of sense. I think it all added up to a red card in the end.
Yeah, I mean, considering he was crowned to be back, it was quite a indifferent performance from the Brazilian. And Max, I guess really, an indifferent performance from the team as a whole. And that's before West Brom's boatload of goals. You look at the first 25 minutes before Chelsea scored, and they were so sloppy in possession, weren't they?
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, obviously, the sending off didn't help. And, you know, the numerical disadvantage clearly affected them, as it would do any team. But I don't think you can only say that, you know, Chelsea were completely on top and completely dominating, and then the red card turned the tide of the game and West Brom, you know, scored five in the next 5 minutes. There were already signs that they were, you know, giving the ball away cheaply and kind of making defensive mistakes. I think there'd been a couple of sloppy passes around the back when they were playing out from the goalkeeper, and West Brom almost caught them a couple of times, and they had a couple of warnings, and then finally they were punished for it. So I think maybe this result, you know, will come as a bit of a wake-up call. They'll realise that they've maybe become a little bit overconfident in some of their playing from the back, and, you know, just a timely reminder for Tuchel, who's had a very nice start in English football, that you really can't afford to take any game lightly in the Premier League, even if you're playing against a team in 19th who are likely to go down. And I think maybe some of his selections, particularly at the back, might come to haunt him if they miss out on the Champions League, because obviously they've been going with generally a back three of Azpilicueta, Rudiger and Christensen. And Zouma, who was really in the side under Lampard, has been phased out a bit, hasn't played much, and obviously still has been injured. And he put not one of them. You can understand, you know, a bit of rotation, maybe put one of them in, particularly given Rudiger started all three games for Germany in the international break. But putting both of them in at the same time in the same game, maybe I'm saying this with hindsight, but it was a bit of a risky call. And yeah, it turned out that way.
So, Cole, in terms of Chelsea going into the interval 2-1 down, at that point, that's Tuchel's first real test as a manager. When you look at full-time, how does 2-1 become 5-2? Is that because he's gone for broken thought, right, we need to somehow engineer a win, or has carelessness throughout been their root cause of failure?
I think just the latter, Dan, to be honest. You know, I think you've got a side that, you know, everyone's just coming back from the international break, aren't they? You know, minds might not fully be on it. And it's one of them days where, you know, like I say, you know, I don't think you need to go into it, or everyone, you know, if you're a Chelsea fan, you don't need to go into panic mode right now, because given how they've performed since he came in, you get the impression that's not going to become the norm under him. It's just one of those, you know, bad days at the office that all teams can have, you know, during the course of a season. Even a team sometimes that goes on to win the leagues, even convincingly, can have the odd disaster of a result. If we look at Man City, they're walking it. But then you could look at that Leicester game earlier in the season when Leicester went there and basically embarrassed them on that day. And you started thinking, but they've proven that the quality takes over come the end. I think that's just an off day for Chelsea. You know, probably not helped by all coming back from an international break. Then you get the red card, and then you just kind of get the impression they can't recover it from there. But as you say, it'll just make sure, you know, that Tuchel doesn't get too comfortable with how it's been and suddenly start thinking it's too easy in this league. And, you know, you might find if you're Chelsea, you know, wasn't a great time of the season to lose a game like that, but it could just be that it wakes them up a little bit to make sure that final run into the end of the season, that kind of thing doesn't happen again.
So, Matthew, Matheus Pereira scored 2 goals before the interval. Do you think he'll hang around at West Brom if they go down? Is he a bit too talented for the Baggies, or could he be that kind of Emiliano Buendia figure at the Hawthorns next season?
I think a lot of it will depend on what sort of ambitions West Bromwich Albion have, because if they... And, you know, and a lot of that depends on whether or not Sam Allardyce decides to stick around. Because if they are showing the ambition of, right, we're going to bounce up straight away, which, you know, Sam Allardyce with your side, you always have a chance of being in the Premier League next season, whether or not you're, you know, low in the Premier League or in the Championship. When you have Sam Allardyce, you know you are in with a strong chance of staying there. So if they keep with that, then I think there's a chance he sticks around to, you know, try and be, you know, bounce back, as it were. If they, you know, change Sam Allardyce and go for a longer term sort of approach where he might think, oh, we may not go up this season, but, you know, it'll take some time, then I think there's a chance he'll jump, because there will absolutely be suitors for him. You can just tell he's, you know, not much of a one man team, but you can tell he is a quality player above what, you know, the rest of the West Brom side is. So I can imagine, you know, teams in and around the bottom of the Premier League, your likes of Crystal Palaces, your Newcastles, if they stay up, you know, those sort of teams, I can imagine will be looking out for him. So yeah, so a lot of it will depend on what West Brom's ambitions are.
Well, Max, talking of ambition and Sam Allardyce, It does seem he's kind of hedging his bets at the moment. His comments were quite guarded before the Chelsea game in terms of what happens next season. Do you think he's looking for an exit route if it does go badly? Do you think he'll stay on, or will he use the kind of lack of budget, in inverted commas, as an easy route to get out of the club?
Yeah, that's a bit of a tricky one. I think he wouldn't want to stay in the Championship unless he was pretty sure that the club was going to make a good bid to get up straight away. As you say, if they are more focused on what might be a kind of a more financially viable way of doing it, which is a kind of long-term invest slowly, maybe invest in young players with a bit of room to improve and kind of try and get up in the next 2 or 3 years, then, as I say, that might be a more financially viable way of doing it. But I suspect if they're looking for someone to do that, that won't be Sam Allardyce. He'll take his end of season. He'll take his end of season money and he'll go. As has already been mentioned, I think if West Brom think to themselves, right, this is the year to get back up. You know, we've obviously got the parachute payments. We're going to try and keep the core of our squad together. We might have to sell one or two, but we want to keep the majority of our squad so we can go straight back up again and have another good go at it. Then in that case, I think Allardyce will stick around, because he stayed with West Ham, didn't he? And he got them promoted from the Championship in just one season. So he's definitely got the capability of doing it.
Well, Cole, another player who scored a brace against Chelsea was Callum Robinson. So instead of enjoying his time with his teammates in the dressing room, he has to deal with more faceless and mindless idiots who spout racism on social media. Now, you know, this is a problem which just isn't going away. If anything, it's getting worse.
Yeah, that's right. We've seen a number of it, haven't we, Dan? And obviously, you know, we've seen it at our own club, haven't we, this weekend with Davinson Sanchez. And I think, you know, the shame about it is, I think, you know, if you're a professional footballer or that, you might accept, you know, criticism of your performance. And I think, you know, all those players would sit there and go, listen, I don't mind people potentially having an opinion. And if they want to go on social media and maybe say, oh, we don't think you're good enough, or you don't do this well enough. Well, that's one thing. You know, yes, sometimes it's even that can go, you know, and be harsh. But when you start coming and people are doing the sort of things they are doing and making the comments that they are making, that is just crossing a line that really shouldn't be crossed. And these guys shouldn't have to put up with doing their jobs. You know, I think these people who are doing this, I'd love to see how they'd react if someone went into their work and started throwing this sort of abuse at them and treating them like that, you know, just because they've done their job a certain way. It's not on. These are mindless idiots. But I think we've come to a situation now where we've got to realise this won't go away. There's an element of society where, you know, this for them is the norm. I think now there's real pressure needs to start being put on the social media platforms to kind of get this under control and actually do something that can kind of eradicate this. We've all said before, haven't we, that, you know, maybe it's got to be along this line that you've got to have a valid passport or something to set up a social media account. And if you don't have that sort of information at hand where you can be tracked, then you're simply just not allowed to create an account. They've got to really do something, because this won't go away, unfortunately, unless these platforms do something to really get this under control. And I think they now have got to start taking a lot more responsibility than what they are. You know, you can see things on Twitter where you can get accounts that can be, you know, racially abuse people, and the account doesn't get suspended, where someone calls out that racism or that racist person, and next thing you know, because you've, you know, contravened their rules in the language you might have used, you're suddenly suspended for a week or something. And you just look at those incidents and say, how is that possible? So you're not going to suspend the person who's been racist, but when I've called them out, now I'm getting the suspension. And I think now we've got to put the weight of this on these platforms, and, you know, they've got to start really taking the ball by the horns and sort this out and do something, because I think that is the only way you will stop it at all.
Because, Matthew, we're now sadly at the point where if you're a black footballer and you score a goal or you have a bad performance, you're either going to get it in the neck from the club you scored against or so-called fans of your club. So is this football's problem or society's?
Oh, it's definitely a societal problem. Definitely, you know, there will always be, you know, the bad people and football problems. There's only so much that, you know, football itself can do. We see all these, you know, messages of, you know, players, you know, taking the knee and players wearing shirts and making gestures, like Wilfried Zaha deciding not to take the knee because he decides to, you know, protest in another way, as it were. All these different things. There's only so much the football can, you know, try to do to influence. But at the end of the day, it's a societal thing. And I don't think many, you know, if you are a racist, as it were, I don't think you're going to be put off with, you know, with all the players taking the knee. In fact, if you take a look at some of the comments and everything, that sort of, you know, infuriates and, you know, multiplies the anger and the racist anger around it. So it is definitely a societal issue. Football can help in a way with some of the stuff it does, but at the end of the day, it's a people problem. And unfortunately, there are enough bad eggs in society. Now, bad eggs is probably a softer term, but I don't want to use too bad language. But yeah, there's only so much that, you know, society has to do to try and weed these people out.
And of course, Max, this isn't a Premier League problem either. If we go to La Liga, it's arguably worse there because you've got players dishing it out to other players. So that happens, and then you get Valencia being threatened with a points deduction if they don't then fulfil the fixture after walking off because their teammate has suffered abuse. So what kind of message does that send out?
Yeah, it's a very poor message. It's a very poor message because then you're saying that the fault for that incident is with Valencia. Whereas, of course, they're perfectly entitled to walk off the pitch in protest against what was said to the player. And, you know, the pressure and the anger and, you know, all of that should be on from the team that was giving out the abuse. And further to what's happening on social media, I follow a Palace account, and basically he tweeted out, I think, a 10-second clip from the Championship of Ivan Toney scoring a goal for Brentford, and within minutes his account got shut down for a month for 10 seconds of a video clip that was shared from another account in the Championship for copyright reasons. So people say, oh, you know, the infrastructure isn't there, there aren't enough people to, you know, there aren't enough people moderating the website to get rid of things like that. That is absolute bollocks. There are enough people, it's just not a priority for them. Because when you see copyright infringements going on, or people, you know, playing clips from a song or from a video, or, you know, where there are rights holders and things like that, it's snuffed out instantly and people are given serious, you know, long-term bans. And it's just not the case with racism. So it kind of shows you where their priorities are, unfortunately.
Absolutely. That's a really good point that, you know, the money behind Premier League streams, they get shut straight away, don't they? Racism is someone else's problem. And the start thing in all of this, what we've just discussed, those incidents, is a snapshot of one weekend. That's not even the course of the season. If it was the course of the season, that would be three incidents too many. But that's in the space of 2 days, and we've not even touched on Glenn Kamara and his abuse. So on that topic, Matthew, what did you make of Gareth Bale's dose of rough justice during the international break? Are you for players taking care of this for themselves?
That is if we are to believe, because this is I know that a furore has been sort of brought up about this, that Gareth Bale, you know, deliberately elbowed the Czech player who was, you know, at the centre of all this. If we want to go down that route, I'm not 100% sure, because again, you can't prove intent to whether or not Gareth Bale, that was him, or whether or not he was just looking to protect himself. But I think there is an element of that, of, you know, the game trying to police itself, as it were. Even there, you've got to somewhat be, you know, risky. It's a bit of a risk when you try to do that, because Gareth Bale himself could have been sent off, which, you know, is vital for him. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, obviously, elbowing someone compared to racism, it's not quite the same barrier. But I just think you've got to be very careful, because there will be lines that some players will cross. You know, Gareth Bale was, you know, with that elbow, again, if we're going by the whole police in the game sort of thing, that could have been a lot worse, you know, and, you know, maybe a fractured skull or something like that. So yes, but probably not through the methods that maybe some people are implying, as it were.
Yeah, I think you have to be quite cute or quite clever if you were to do it like that. Not like ice hockey, where men are men and they all just quite happily beat each other up and it's done and it's, you know, it's all resolved there and then. But it's a kind of, you don't want to see players going, right, I'm going to go out and get him and I'm going to end his career because he's done something else. You know, you've got to be quite careful. But at the same time, Cole, are these things happening because UEFA won't police it themselves?
Yeah, well, I think that's just the same thing that will happen in any walk of life, isn't it, Dan? You know, if there are rules there and bodies that don't end up doing anything for you and people just start feeling wronged, then there's only an element of time before people suddenly go, well, do you know what? If this is going to happen, then and these people won't do anything about it, then I'll start taking the law into my own hands and I'll dish out my own form of retribution, because that's the only way I might get some or sense of feeling that I haven't been wronged, or when I have been wronged, I've kind of got some form of, you know, glee out of putting right what's gone wrong. And it is true, you know, the governing bodies, I think, you know, they need to crack down on this. As we say, the social media platforms need to do something. And that, to me, is truly the only way that we will see this issue resolved. It won't solve it completely, obviously, but this shouldn't be happening right now. As you said, Dan, one incident is one incident more than it should be. This has now happened so many times this season that, you know, we've got to get to grip on this, you know. We've still got to get to grip on it potentially in stadiums and do more when fans return, because no doubt when fans return, we'll see more incidences happen there. But that is something that then the clubs and the police can control. Right now, you've got to look at who can control this. It is the governing bodies. But like I say, a lot more pressure needs to now start being put upon the social media platforms. And as Max has rightly said, you know, when these platforms are able to go and knock people off or suspend people for using clips or music that they say shouldn't be being used, well, then you can't come trying to give excuses that you can't put the effort in to try and find these people who are doing what they're doing. And it's about time they pulled their finger out and weren't let off with that at all.
Because, Max, with Slavia Prague facing Arsenal on Thursday, the expulsion that many were clamouring for, that's not going to happen. You know, they're not going to get booted out of the tournament within the next 36 hours. So I guess there's an already uneasy feeling that the events at Ibrox are quickly becoming forgotten, and that the so-called punishment, or actually, no, sorry, the so-called crime, it won't be met with a necessary punishment. You're getting the sort of feeling it's going to be a fine of some sort, a bit of a slap wrist, but not really befitting of what actually happened in Glasgow.
No, very much. And, you know, there's no real... there's no real disincentive for anyone else not to do it again, because, you know, Slavia Prague, I'm not an expert on their finances, but I imagine whatever kind of paltry fine that is dished out to them, they'll be able to pay with, you know, which will prove to be about a thousandth of their weekly wage bill, and they'll just pay it off, no problem, whatever, move on. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't think the excuses that Slavia Prague are coming out with, which are pathetic if you've read them, that, you know, they're just saying, oh, well, you know, you can't prove it, all of that. And I mean, yeah, if you whisper something in someone's ear, then, and there's no recording of it, then you can't. But I think any right-minded person will be able to discern what happened, you know, wasn't kosher, based on the reactions of the players and based on the testimony of Kamara. I don't know why the default isn't believing the player who's made that accusation, rather than just saying, oh, well, you know, it's innocent until proven guilty, because there aren't microphones on the pitch, really, apart from maybe right next to the referee. So stuff is always going to go under the radar, and, you know, it's difficult to prove exactly what people have said, for example, in the Suarez and Evra, stuff like that. But I think when players like that, like Kamara, come out and it's so clear that what has happened, you know, isn't acceptable, and that there has been something racist said based on the reactions of the players and the testimonies of the Rangers players around, I think, you know, you just need to take it seriously as a punishment. And it needs to get to a point where if countries doing it, you bar them from qualification from the next tournament. Or if Prague do it, you know, the team that they were drawn against gets a bye into the next round, and they're kind of expelled from the competition. Because at the moment, when you're just kind of hitting a very small portion of their wallet, it's not enough by a long way to be a disincentive to these kind of clubs.
Well, you think, from previous experience, they'll probably get fined about €30,000 or something. that's not even a dent in the prize money they'll get from that competition run. Do you know what I mean? For the money they pick up in group stage wins and get into the quarterfinals, it means absolutely nothing. And because of that, the whole incident will be just a footnote in history. You know, it won't get dealt with properly as we'd all like to see. And that really is fundamental in terms of the problem that we've got at the moment. But let's focus back on matters on the field, and we need to go to relegation corner. So, Cole, I'm going to get your take on Spurs later on this evening, so keep that powder dry. However, I'd like your take on Newcastle on Sunday. How important could that point be, both for the club and for Steve Bruce himself?
Yeah, I think for Newcastle, that was a great result, wasn't it? And I think probably what was more encouraging was the performance. Now, whether you put that down to Spurs being poor or Newcastle, you know, suddenly picking their game up, but I thought they played well. They certainly deserve something out of the game. And when you look at the end of the game and see that they've had the most shots that they've had on target throughout the course of the season, I think they'll come away feeling very happy. You know, a point against a team that, you know, on paper, most would have said, well, they probably shouldn't stand a chance of getting a point. You know, this is a team within the top six pushing for top four. The form they've been on lately, you know, everyone, you know, well, certainly some Spurs fans were just too confident going into the game. But I think the manner of the performance and the way that they also showed the character to come back and some get themselves level, I think that'll all be very encouraging. And like as we always say, you know, momentum is a great thing, especially at this time of the season. And, you know, with Fulham slipping up slightly, that may just give them an element of confidence to feel that they do have a chance of getting out of this. Because before that game, the way form was going for both, you know, Newcastle or Fulham, you only thought there was one team that would potentially be the favourite to get out of there. So I think Newcastle will be very pleased with their work this weekend.
Well, Matthew, in terms of Newcastle's attacking endeavour, we've never seen such the likes of this season. You know, where on earth did that come from? Did it come from their own violation, or was it more just because Spurs were laying things on a plate?
I think it's a little bit of both, if I'm being honest. I think there is also some element of, again, Carl saw touched on, but also the belief that Newcastle United have, which is baffling, because if you look at their last two games, it was Aston Villa at home, which again they got a last minute equaliser against, which makes you think, oh, they've got this fight and this passion, and oh, they're not giving up the cause. But then they go to Brighton and get absolutely tonked 3-0. So where's the inconsistencies coming on there? But so I want to probably lean it slightly towards Newcastle because of that whole belief system, everything, and oh, you know, in the dire situation we are in, you know, Fulham are slightly starting to pick up form or what have you. Obviously, this before the Fulham game and everything. Yeah, there's oh, we have to win this game, we have to get something out of it, and you know, that's when they throw the kitchen sink forward. And you know, dare I say it, fair play to them for not giving up on that front.
Well, I think they were worthy of a point. But Max, in terms of a top four pendulum, when you consider Tottenham had the perfect opportunity to overtake Chelsea after their blip that we've discussed earlier in the show, they spurned it. So add the fact they're still playing catch-up, do you think that it's now done for Mourinho and he's not so merry men in terms of the race for the top four?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, it would have been a big psychological boost for them to have overtaken Chelsea, because, you know, that would have really rubbed it in Chelsea's faces. Not only did they lose and concede five goals and, you know, will be without Thiago Silva because of dismissal against a pretty poor and probably soon to be relegated West Brom, but also Tottenham, who are kind of, you know, their rivals for the top four, as well as their somewhat locational rivals, overtook them at the same time. Yeah, I think that would have been a real blow. But as it is, Tottenham are still only 2 points behind Chelsea. They've got a better goal difference, albeit only slightly. And, you know, West Ham have got a couple of tricky games coming up. So I very much don't think it's over for them. It will have been a setback not to get those 2 points, particularly given how close some of the teams around them are. You know, Everton are 2 points behind with a game in hand. Liverpool are on the same points now, and then they've obviously got West Ham and Chelsea ahead of them. But if they pull some form together towards the end of the season, in the last eight games, there's absolutely no reason they can't get top four.
Well, I think, really, they can't afford to lose any matches between now and the end of the season. Really, I think they had to win all 10. So if we think that the damage isn't as done as much because Chelsea lost on Saturday, but I think they're up against it. I'll get your take later on, Cole. But Matthew, we need to go to relegation corner part two, because let's go to Villa Park. And Cole, I want your take now, because when you look at that performance after an hour, Fulham looking rather rosy, aren't they? You think, well, hang on, the relegation pendulum has swung in another direction. However, the last half hour went completely different for Scotty P and his players.
Yeah, you know, as you say, the first part of the game, you're thinking, well, yeah, you know, playing really well, get the goal, get yourselves in front. And to be honest, you know, I like watching Fulham. You know, Fulham and Brighton are two teams that I really enjoy watching because, you know, the football is really nice to watch and it's pleasing on the eye. And they play some good stuff, and you've got to credit the managers because that's happening on the training pitch. Unfortunately, you know, they let Villa get level, and then kind of I just think that the legs go, you know, and Villa obviously get a sniff. They take advantage, and Villa have played really well this season. So, you know, it's not a result that I think Fulham can come away and probably be that disappointed. I think the manner of the performance still gives them a glimmer of hope to think that they can get out of this. But getting the lead when they did, I think they would be disappointed that they didn't manage to hold on to that, or at least at worst just get a point from the game, because again, that would have been huge. And at the moment, any little slip up when a team above you kind of gets a slight advantage, although it might only be a slight advantage, it's just, you know, an advantage that you don't want to give them when the job's hard enough as it is. But Fulham will just have to kind of dust themselves down from that. You know, got next fixture coming up. That's where you just need to see them try and bounce back, because that's the kind of problem that teams can have down there, is that suddenly you can go on a good run, but then when, you know, a result doesn't go your way, you then don't want to slip into that next three or four games on the bounce where you don't pick nothing up, because then that kind of starts defining your season. And at this point of the season, Fulham can't then now, you know, look to go on a run of three or four games where they don't get nothing. So take this one on the chin. You still played some good stuff. Recover and make sure you just get the result in the next game. But, you know, yeah, shame they couldn't hold on to that.
Matthew, how concerned are you at the fact it's now three defeats in a row? That win against Liverpool and that decent run of form at the start of the year, it's something of a distant memory at the moment. And also, the greater concern is that Newcastle are just beginning to come out of arm's reach. They've got that game in hand. They're 3 points clear now. That final day playoff might not even be a thing at the moment. So is it panic stations?
It's not for me, but that mainly comes down to the fact that I accepted relegation before the season even started, so I'm not overly fussed. Obviously, I would be disappointed, but I won't be devastated because I saw it coming. And I still think there are enough points for us to get. We've still got to play Burnley, who, again, on their day, we saw what they could do. We saw against Southampton, you know, they are there to be got, in effect, even if they are looking good. Wolves, as well as our next game, we saw against West Ham, they are there to be got as well. So there's a couple of favourable results. And, you know, that three-point gap to Newcastle, all it has done, because, again, that relegation playoff is basically, has been my motto for the past couple of weeks, is so long as we can just keep in touch with Newcastle for that last day, I think... On that last day, I think we'd win and we'd stay up. So even when they were, you know, 1 point above us, because again, because we've got to play each other on the last day, 1 point doesn't really jump us above them, sort of thing. So 1 point to 2 point to 3 points, really, we haven't really lost any ground on them. Obviously, we'd like to be above them, but if you want to play it to that relegation playoff, which I think we would win, then it's not panic stations, because I don't think we've really left the original station that we were in, if you want to put it that way.
So what you're kind of saying is, as long as the playoff is still on, there's nothing to worry about at the moment, because, again, you can't stay up this early. Obviously, you'd like to, but as long as it's still live for the final day, you'll take that.
Absolutely.
I like it. But, Max, I don't know about you, but when I see Fulham at the moment and the kind of errors they make, both, you know, Sunday, also against Leeds before the international break, you kind of look at them and you almost wince because you think, oh, that's bad. Then you think, oh, I wonder what Matthew thinks of that. So what we've seen... They are pretty basic, and that's a bit of a worry now, isn't it?
Yeah. To be honest, I'm always quite optimistic when I talk about Fulham, because I just look at the way they play, and I think the team that they are now, they're competitive, and had that team the way it is now and with the personnel that they're regularly playing and the style that they play, had they started the season like that, I think they'd be above Brighton and Newcastle and possibly Burnley at the moment. It's just that they had a, you know, every other team in the league had an eight-game head start, because they just started with you know, players who are championship level are not good enough. And then suddenly he kind of changed it up a bit. And now they're, and since that point, 7 or 8 games into the season, they've been much more competitive and attacking and looks much more capable. So I think if they do go down, it won't be from the way they've played since that point. It will just be the fact that they had a pretty bad start. But I mean, they look good against they look good against Palace, which is, you know, I watched the whole game, and they passed it around nicely. They had more possession, they had more chances, and they should have really won. I think maybe the one criticism of them I would have since they're since they've kind of reinvented themselves 8 or 9 games into the season is that they're maybe not clinical enough, because at the moment, you know, they're getting quite a lot of chances and they're playing quite nicely, and they're just not kind of eking out those results when they're on top. And, you know, as you know, in the Premier League, if you don't take your chances, you are going to lose games, however well you've played. You know, Brighton well know that as well. So I think they've definitely got enough in the tank to keep themselves up. And as Matthew says, as long as they're in touch on by the final day, I would back them in a one-way, you know, one-match relegation shootout against Newcastle as well.
Well, it could have the eyes of the nation on it, really, when you think about it. If the title is done and dusted, which it will be much earlier than that, the top four could also be done. It could be that everyone's last day choice is on that channel. And you're right, though, to be honest, if it is just a one-off, then you would put Fulham in the ascendancy with that home advantage. So it's certainly not done and dusted just yet. But, Carl, in terms of basic errors, Arsenal were responsible for shooting themselves in the foot on Saturday night. Surely after that result against Liverpool, it's a case of all of the eggs now in the Europa League basket.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, as far as the league goes, you know, you can't see them putting a real push for fourth. If you even look at fifth and sixth, I think that might be way too, you know, beyond them for the way the season's panning out. Again, as you say, very sloppy this weekend and kind of, you know, not gifted Liverpool all their goals, but some very soft goals there that defensively you'd look at and go, that just wasn't good enough, and also didn't really cause enough problems going the other way. So when you see that the Europa League is a route in to the Champions League, then I think this is a sort of point where the manager will start looking and saying, right, well, hang on, maybe now the priority is this competition, and we start taking our foot off the gas a little bit in the league. Obviously, not too much, because you don't want to start slipping down and losing games you probably shouldn't. But I think there will be the priority turn to the Europa League now and say, look, let's make this a real push. But they'll need to do a lot better because, you know, again, if they put that sort of performance in the latter stages of the Europa League, they'll get punished. And we're still looking at an Arsenal side where, you know, defensive frailty is what's going to cost them. And I think it will cost them more points in the league this season. And ultimately, I think it will probably cost them in that latter stages of the Europa League.
Well, I guess if you're Arteta, you're looking at the calendar between now and the final day, including the Europa League final. You're thinking, I've got 8 relatively meaningless games in the Premier League. I've got a maximum of 5 in Europe. I can use those Premier League games to rest and rotate, be fresh for Europe. In theory, that's a plan that is almost faultless. However, we know in practice that it doesn't always work, that you might then chuck the Premier League games, lose the final, then they're out of Europe for good for next season. If that is the case, Matthew, can they be clever enough to game the system and be one of those teams that play once a week and then bounce back much stronger, or is the quality not yet there in the squad?
I think the quality is there. You see the young players that are coming through. You know, you've got the experienced players, the likes of Aubameyang and Lacazette, although Lacazette's sort of in that contract situation where they've got to make a decision this summer. You've got the experienced players and you've got the youngsters coming through, the likes of Saka, Emil Smith Rowe, Gabriel Martinelli, who I absolutely love. I could go on to win the Ballon d'Or. I'm saying it right now. I think he's that talented. But, yeah, they could do it if they were to be one of these, you know, one game a week teams rather than having to battle Thursday, Sunday. But I do think they need the Europa League because they need a drawing power. There are still some tinkers that need to be made to the squad. And will they be able to attract them without, you know, European football? You know, Champions League gone. Can they attract someone even with Europa League football? Maybe they can. But I'm not sure if they can. I'm not sure if they'll be able to do it without European football. So I think they need to go all in. I don't think they can really afford for the long term. I don't think they can afford to miss out on Europe for a season.
Max, one of the players they did manage to snare with European football in the summer was Thomas Partey. Is the Partey out for the Ghanaian? What have you made of him this season?
Yeah, he's kind of been a bit stop and start because of his injuries, and he's been in and out of the side. He's obviously been travelling away for international duty with Ghana as well, which maybe hasn't helped. But yeah, I mean, maybe because we're almost at the end of the season now, we're getting into obviously April, so it's maybe a little bit late in the season to say, oh, the jury's still out. But we haven't actually seen that much of him. I think he's only made about 16 appearances, at least in the Premier League. And so, and a lot of them have been kind of half appearances here and there where he's taken off at half time or, you know, brought on as a sub at the end to kind of build up his fitness. So we don't really know, because we haven't seen a kind of sustained run of him playing 90 minutes every week for, you know, a couple of months. But I think he's probably shown enough to show that he's a definite starter at the club, based on the fact that Ceballos kind of floats in and out of games. Xhaka's obviously error prone. Torreira and Guendouzi are out on loan. So he hasn't shown the kind of form that made Arsenal pay 45 million for him, but he's still, you know, probably they're still their best central midfielder on paper. And I'm sure that will start translating onto the pitch as well once he gets a regular run of games together.
So, Cole, for Arsenal, if there is no Europe next season and they finish, say, 10th, that's not a great deal of prize money to spend in the summer. What do they do in terms of transfer strategy?
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? Because, you know, they're still a big club, and I think they can still attract the sort of players that some other clubs wouldn't. But, you know, given the fact that this kind of decline keeps happening season after season, there's no European football, at least, then that kind of takes a lot of shine off a club, doesn't it? So you then do start looking at, you know, the pot of players you can look at does become slightly different. It may be that they'll have to offload players to get some funds to bring people in. But yeah, it's hard to know where their summer activity goes. You know, I think, again, with them, their problem is always defensively. I think Tierney looks really good on the left side, but I still think you've got to question the centre-halves and the right side fullback. So I think that's where a lot of their focus needs to be defensively. And also, you know, they've got to try and sort that, you know, players like Xhaka and that still, you know, have the odd occasion where they lose their head and cost them. But if there's no European football at all, then they do become less of an attraction for those players. And where they're looking suddenly changes. And I don't think that's not a place where they want to be. So, you know, it's one that, isn't it? It's all very well and good saying you're going to put your eggs in that European basket. But as we found out this season, if it goes wrong, then you're suddenly left staring down the barrel and wondering where you go from here.
With a lot of cracked eggs, Carl, in Zagreb. That's what happened to us.
Massively, mate. Massively.
But Matthew, by the same token, Liverpool's Easter win. What does Jurgen Klopp do with his eggs? Does he keep a couple in the top four basket? Or is he piling them all into the Champions League one? Does a lot of it depend, the split of the eggs, on what happens against Real Madrid both tonight and in the second leg?
Yeah, I think a lot of it will be dictated by what happens tonight, as we record. If they go out and they win, you know, if they win 3-0, then he can start to think, oh, we're going to go far in the Champions League. If, for instance, they turn around and get tonked 3-0 and then, you know, away goals and everything like that. Wait, it's first legs at Anfield, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
These games get confusing.
Yeah, it could be anywhere. So,
whatever. Regardless, if they look as if they're going out, then yeah, it gives them a chance to get into the Champions League that way. They are still technically in both competitions, as it were, which I think is sort of causing a problem. You'd like to know one way or the other. Similar to Arsenal, similar to Spurs, they've had an extra couple of weeks to get their eggs in one basket, as it were. So it'll cause Jurgen Klopp a few problems. I personally think he would like to know one way or the other which way things are going to go, just so he knows. But at the moment, he can't really do anything.
Well, I guess, Max, it's the same dilemma for Thomas Tuchel. Now really is the time of the season where a manager has to take stock of what he has and where those resources can go to get the optimum result.
Yeah, very much, very much. And, you know, he has had a fairly favourable draw in the Champions League against Porto.
Yep.
But, I mean, it's not guaranteed that they're going to get through in that Porto are, you know, tricky and stubborn opponents. And we shouldn't forget they knocked out Cristiano Ronaldo's Juventus in the last round. And, you know, that was a really high-scoring game. And they're a bit of a kind of unknown quantity. I don't imagine Chelsea will have played them recently in European competition because they normally don't reach the kind of the quarterfinal stages. So I feel like they can't just send out a second-string side and expect them to win just because Porto may be one of the weakest sides left in the last eight. They're still in the last eight and they're on merit. So he is going to have to take it seriously. But as you say, it's going to be difficult for him because he's got West Ham ahead of them now. And then obviously Tottenham and Liverpool and possibly Everton, but probably not Everton, breathing down their necks as well. So he is going to have to, at some point, he's going to have to think to himself, well, I am going to prioritise playing in the Champions League because, you know, I feel like this is going to give us the best chance of European competition next season if the worst happens and we don't qualify via our position in the Premier League. But it's going to be really interesting to see how he manages his squad because a lot of players in his squad have been kind of chucked to the side and really shown that he maybe doesn't trust them so much. For example, Kurt Zouma, who's played quite rarely. For example, Tammy Abraham, who's already scored like 14 goals this season, 12, 13, 14 goals this season, but seems to be completely out of the picture. And that'll be interesting because, you know, he's going to have to rely on some of these players at some point over the rest of the season. And, you know, some of them haven't played in a long time. They're not going to be match fit fully. And how he kind of manages that rotation is going to be really interesting to watch.
So, Cole, no such balancing act for David Moyes and West Ham. The top four destiny is now in their hands. Do you think they can do it?
Well, yeah, I mean, full steam ahead and full credit to them. And, you know, the signing of Jesse Lingard was one that when they made that signing, you know, I was kind of relieved at the time that he didn't end up putting a Spurs shirt on, given what we knew of him. But that has been a signing that has suddenly kind of pushed them on. And he's playing really well at the moment, isn't he? And, you know, you kind of sit there and go, actually, that was a really shrewd bit of business for them. You know, the way things are going and the way they're playing, you wouldn't write it off right now, would you? You know, I couldn't sit here and say we felt they'd fall away a little bit earlier than they did. They're still going. That was a tough game away at Wolves. You know, Wolves are not playing great, but it's still a tough place to go. They've got the result. They're at home next against Leicester City. That one, again, I think if they suddenly get a result out of that game, then I think you've really got to sit there and say, well, actually, you know, you'd feel confident if you were them that this might be on. Because if they go and get the result there against a good Leicester side, then I think the confidence will grow and that momentum could help them get it over the line. But this is a real interesting one. There's part of you thinks they might just fall short just at the death. You could still probably see Chelsea overtaking them. Obviously, we're not too far behind. Liverpool are not too far behind. And you know Liverpool will get points. I don't think we can do it personally. I think we'll drop too many points. This is going to be tight. This is going to be a tight run. But I think that next game against Leicester is huge for them. Get a result there. And I'd be, you know, I'd be tempted to put some money on them making the top four.
Yeah, the weekend's going to be huge for the Hammers. But Matthew, game 30 of the season is now in the history books. And I think now we can sort of dismiss West Ham being fourth as sheer fluke alone.
Yeah, if you want to. I am still in the boat that they...
You're not so
I am still in the boat that I don't think... Yes, they have had an incredible season. I don't want to take that away from them. But I just do think they are, you know... They have been beneficiaries of the fact that Tottenham have had their collapse. You know, they were top of the table, now down to sixth, I want to say, Tottenham, whatever. So, you know, you can bump them down. Arsenal being Arsenal, in effect, Liverpool being Liverpool. Again, in any normal season, they would be in and around seventh at this point, challenging for the Europa League. And again, I don't want this to be anti-West Ham. They've had a good season. I like watching Jesse Lingard. I like watching Pavel Socek. I like watching Declan Rice and Mark Noble as much as the next man. Indeed, Jarrod Bowen as well. And David Moyes has done an incredible job. But if they were seventh in this scenario, it would still be an incredible job. I just think that the latter, that last, you know, 15% of it just comes down to the fact that the other teams around them have had a bad season. That's all I really want to put it on.
I see where you're coming from, but you have to also remember that one team has to make advantage of others' misfortune. And I don't think we should always be too quick to sort of say it's only because this team's or teams are bad. You should really give the actual team which is doing that constant job the credit that they really deserve. Now, whether West Ham can actually finish in the top four, I don't know. And Max, part of that reason could be the lack of Declan Rice for the next month.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. I was actually going to mention it, even if the question wasn't kind of directly related to him. But he could be a big, big miss. And yeah, they beat Wolves yesterday without him. But, you know, he is arguably their best player. He's one of England's best players in recent times. And Mark Noble did a decent job last night. I saw a couple of my mates on Twitter who support West Ham were praising him. But, you know, the age he is, I don't think he's going to be able to churn that out on a very consistent basis. I mean, it helps that they're not in any other domestic or European competitions. They can literally only focus on the Premier League, and they might only be playing, you know, once a week. But there is a big drop-off between Souček and Rice, their normal two kind of holding players, and then the potential replacements that are coming in. And I think he does make a big difference to them, Rice. And you saw yesterday that Wolves, who've been pretty goal-shy, scored twice. And it's only by virtue of the fact that West Ham's attack was on very good form and were very clinical that they managed to get the result. And, you know, they did still get the result. I don't want to take that away from them. But they are less solid defensively when Rice isn't there. And I think against Wolves, they kind of got away with it. Against teams like Leicester and other good teams that they're going to come up against, I think they've got a really tricky next three or four games. You know, that might be the slight hindrance to them, where if you play Rice, you might get a draw or a win. And without him, you maybe don't get that result over the line, because he does make such a big difference. But yeah, on whether they deserve it this season, it is kind of difficult, because would this current West Ham team be getting to the quarterfinals of the Champions League? I don't think so. But, you know, maybe with the summer of recruitment, and the recent recruitment's been so good, if they can promise players Champions League, then they can maybe attract the kind of players that would help them progress in Europe. But then I also agree with you, Dan, that, yeah, I mean, Liverpool have had a pretty nightmare season. Tottenham are inconsistent. Chelsea obviously had that bad run which got Lampard sacked. But at the same time, while all those teams have been very inconsistent and, you know, dropping points where they shouldn't, West Ham have been the ones who have been ultra consistent, you know, scoring lots of goals, not conceding many, and getting the results over the line when no other team has. So at the moment, I think you'd say they probably deserve it, although they may fall out of the top four by the end of the season.
There we go. Me and Max in agreement there. Right, the quick fire round. There's a few games left to mop up. So, Cole, you're off to Old Trafford for me. Man United, they come back on Sunday to win 2-1 against Brighton. But the big talking point, should Brighton have had a second-half penalty?
Yeah, tough one, isn't it? You kind of think at the other end, that's probably, you know, you could say that might get given at the other end. I've looked at it a couple of times and, you know, it's not 100% certain for me. You know, is there enough of a touch? But I think Brighton will feel hard done by. And again, it was a game where they, you know, that's kind of Brighton's story this season, is it? Played well, looked really good, but just didn't get the result at the end of the game. United would be very happy because, you know, they weren't looking on it. But they'll be glad to get that win over the line, because that just keeps their, you know, chase for the second place where they need it to be. Got a nice little bit of a point buffer, but they'll need to improve again from that performance the other night.
Matthew, you had a theory for me, or for us, regarding Man City's second goal against Leicester on Saturday. We're all ears, mate. What have you got for us?
Well, it basically surrounds the news that Sergio Aguero is leaving in the summer. And as a result, all the talk of Erling Haaland, which we officially, slash unofficially, started a couple of months ago.
Absolutely.
Saying that he should be the one to replace him. But I've been hearing all the talk about, you know, Erling Haaland and whether or not they can sign him this summer. You know, whether or not Man City can afford to this summer, even though because of the, you know, transfer clauses and bidding wars and all that sort of stuff. So really, it's next summer that is really the time to buy, when his transfer clause comes down to like £65 million or something like that. And I think that the plan next year is going to be to have Gabriel Jesus lead the line. And I just thought, when I was looking at the Manchester City's second goal, Raheem Sterling seemed to make a conscious effort to try and get Gabriel Jesus the goal in order to boost, you know, because he could have scored it himself, Raheem Sterling. But he looked for Gabriel Jesus, to then give him like a boost of confidence because they know they're not going to get Erling Haaland this summer. They're going to have to rely on Gabriel Jesus. So they're going to use, they're going to effectively force him as many goals as they can in order to boost his confidence because they know he's going to be the man that has to lead the line next season. That is my theory.
I like it. Watch this space. Gabriel Jesus scores 70 goals to boost his confidence. But Max, I must admit, last night, Monday, I only saw the Palace highlights on Sky Sports YouTube. From what I saw, though, Vincente Guaita can be commended for a performance which kept you guys in the game before Batshuayi hit the smash and grab. So, are you happy with the point?
Yeah, I'm very happy with the point, considering how good Everton are. And yeah, I mean, their home form hasn't been great, and they've lost to, you know, a couple of teams down the bottom, but they're still a very good established Premier League outfit. And you know, if there weren't a lot of other teams doing very well and having very good seasons above them, you know, they'd arguably be in the hunt for the European places, and they could still maybe get Europa League if they have a really good run. But you know, their front three is still arguably Champions League level if you think James Rodriguez, Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin. And obviously the last two of those are fairly young as well, you know, kind of 24-ish, and room to improve too. So yeah, I was happy with the point. I thought we played pretty well. You know, we had more possession. We more than matched them in terms of kind of shots on target and our general play and things like that. I mean, we did rely on Guaita a little bit to bail us out a couple of times with some good saves. And yeah, he's a really, really solid keeper, and I love him. He's very close to a lot of Palace fans' hearts. But yeah, I think the draw was definitely well deserved, and yeah, it was a good performance from us.
Yeah, I like the look of Guaita. I mean, I remember his performance against Spurs at Selhurst Park this season, and I thought he looked something special. You never quite seem linked with any clubs up the hierarchy. I wonder how long he can go under the radar, so to speak, because if he keeps making performances like that, then you will eventually get a big club or bigger club, no, not to do you a disservice, Max, sniffing around. Right, there's two more that I'll take very, very quickly. Southampton got off to a bad start, but turned it around to win 3-2 against Burnley. And more importantly, that will at least give them a win before their cup semi-final. When you consider that's, what, 2-13. They need to start getting ahead of steam before what should hopefully be their first trip to Wembley out of two. And Leeds beat Sheffield United. I don't think we learn anything from that. I think Sheffield United are just ticking down the seconds until the relegation clock finally expires. And talking of the clock expiring, we've hit full-time for this week. So I simply need to do the admin, which is thanking my three great Pod Squad members. Max, thanks for your time this afternoon. I hope you enjoyed that one.
Yeah, very much. Glad to be back and see you next week.
Cheers, mate. Matthew, top work as always. A pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, pleasure as always, just as Max said.
Lovely stuff. And Cole, thanks for wearing the captain's armband this week. Thanks for your time as always.
No problem. Really enjoyed that with you guys and some good chat there.
Lovely stuff. Right, fantastic. Cheers, guys, and also to the listeners out there. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. And until next time, goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.